Anybody? Anybody? Help! Help!
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus review of Castaway.
They may never find us.
A Podbean backer review chosen by Ed Powell.
I took the liberty of sending this to myself. I fed X'd it.
Hosted by Arnie, Stuart, and Jacob.
We have to build it. We have to launch it.
This podcast will contain detailed plot spoilers and harsh language.
Aren't you concerned?
I'm terrified.
Listener discretion is advised.
I would rather take my chance out there on the ocean than to stay here and die on this shithole island, spending the rest of my life talking to a goddamn volleyball!
Today we're discussing Castaway, starring Tom Hanks, directed by Robert Zemeckis. This is Arnie, and I have made podcast.
And Stuart.
This is Jacob, and I feel like I'm living Castaway. You know, L.A. hasn't ever really reopened since March. I'm feeling pretty isolated from civilization. I haven't been able to get a haircut. I got that long hair going, and it's killing me. I feel like I'm learning how to make fire because I can't get fast food. I got to learn how to use that oven, or at least that microwave. Here's the thing. Tom, what am I doing wrong, Mr. Hanks? I've done everything. Long hair, learning how to cook. I've put on 20 pounds. I haven't lost 50 pounds like you did. Like, I feel like that's the one part of Castaway that's not paying off, is that weight loss.
Try eating only crab and coconut and see how it goes.
Yeah, that is a pretty extreme diet.
Yeah, I'll see who will Instacart that to me.
No thanks. But thank you to our August patrons. You're with us still. We have a new patron pick for you by Ed Powell, a longtime listener. Why did Ed pick this movie?
He just has always loved it. He said it has the most realistic and scary plane crash scene that he's ever seen. I hope I never find out if it is actually realistic. He saw it in the theaters, had his heart racing, and he's always been drawn to a Robinson Crusoe story. He has that fantasy of being stranded on a desert island, and then this movie portrays it probably wouldn't be as pleasant as the fantasies. So this movie makes him feel fear, excitement, laughter, and tears. Thinks Tom Hanks is incredible. Likes that there's no score until about three quarters of the way of the movie when Tom Hanks leaves the island and then it comes in. And he has picked two other movies for us before, AI and Vanilla Sky. And he thinks that all three of those have what feels like a tacked-on ending, but he loves this last part, where you think the film ends, it just keeps going and going, and his favorite shot of the whole film is the last shot. He's done a lot of traveling himself. He's visited over 100 countries. Wow. That's actually really cool.
Cool.
Now I'm jealous.
Now, and all three of those movies, interesting enough, are all kind of from the same period. Like that all turn of the millennium. They all have some millennial angst in a certain sense. But we were definitely all, I think this was the year that Survivor hit television. We all kind of had a, could we make it on a desert island kind of thing going on for a little bit. Lost would come to TV a few years later.
Lost was actually Castaway, the TV show. They started to see if they could adapt this into a weekly TV show about stranded people. The concept hit J.J. Abrams, and Lost was born.
Oh, okay. So indeed, it was a trend. But one I missed on. I did not see this movie in theaters. I did not see it on video. I did not see it when I went to go work for Fox and cut Fox movies down for television.
Is this your first time?
The very first time I've ever seen this film.
I have seen this film once before, not in theaters. I saw it when it was available to rent, probably 2001, 2002.
I saw this in theaters on Christmas Day in the year 2000. I really didn't have a whole lot of interest in the movie. I kind of felt like Robert Zemeckis had jumped the shark and gone away from being a story-driven filmmaker into being one who made films just to play with the tech and the special effects and all of that.
But this would be the film to, like, challenge that, right? Because, like, we're not going to do all the tech. Like, it's not going to have the Death Becomes Her kind of, like, tear up the body effects and all. It's like one man on an island.
Some of this island was filmed in the 20th Century Fox parking lot.
Yeah, I figured that out. Once I saw the movie, I'm like, oh, there's a lot more tech here than I thought there would be.
Yes. And then remember all the stories? Because this took forever to film because they filmed it and then they took a year off while Robert Zemeckis made an even worse film called What Lies Beneath, that Harrison Ford thing.
Oh, yeah.
I saw it. His scary movie, supposedly.
Yeah. And during that time, Tom Hanks lost all that weight and grew the scraggly beard. And
this is supposedly why Tom Hanks has diabetes. He blamed it on having to lose all this weight.
Yeah, he lost 50 pounds from the start of the film to the end of the film. He'd put on some weight, you know, at the start.
Yeah, he put on that 50 and then lost it, or at least 30.
He was shooting for his Philadelphia weight again. And all the stories were about how much weight he lost. And I felt like I'd been hearing about this movie forever when it came out. And like, one guy on an island. I mean, I saw Joe versus the Volcano. I don't need to see Castaway. But my father-in-law insisted on having a Christmas where he took the whole family to the movies. And my father-in-law has never paid for anything before or since, but he bought a ticket to Castaway that year. And I'm like, all right, I'll go see a free movie. And I remember really liking it, but not so much that I've ever seen it since.
Yeah, I've only seen it once. And the crazy thing is, in 2003, I started a job with Kinko's, which was soon acquired by FedEx. Became FedEx Kinko. Now it's FedEx Office, I presume. I no longer work for them. But, oh boy, did this movie get talked about a lot.
Oh, I bet. Like, it feels like the greatest product placement I've seen since Reese's Pieces and E.T. I mean, like, this is a FedEx movie starring FedEx. The delivery service that won't open the packages even on a desert island.
I know, that does feel so propagandistic there. But yeah, even Fred Smith, the man who started FedEx, is going to show up in this film.
And this is coming really at the tail end of an incredible decade for Tom Hanks. He pulled his career out of the gutter at the beginning of the decade. Really some big bombs with Bonfire of the Vanities. And then right around League of Their Own, big uptick. He won 2 Oscars, got to direct a movie.
That movie didn't do so well. That Thing You Do didn't do it.
But he got to do a director thing. I mean, again, like, this is just, that's the clout every actor likes to have, is like, they'll let me direct now. I mean, again, just hit after hit. This felt like the last big blockbuster. This made a ton of money, over $200 million just domestically, $400 million globally, 2 Oscar nominations. After this, I don't know, the hits came less frequently. I feel like Lady Killers, Terminal, Da Vinci Code was a hit, but God, it's awful.
Same with The Book, though. I mean, you can't blame him. You know, I felt like after the 90s, he decided to do what he wanted instead of chasing. You know, he had a rough time. I mentioned Joe versus the Volcano, but there was, of course, Bonfire of the Vanities, and I think that in the 90s, once he had his comeback with League of Their Own, he was trying to work with some of the great directors, Spielberg, Zemeckis, Ron Howard. And then I felt like after that, he did what he wanted to do.
He kept working with Spielberg. I mean, Spielberg did Catch Me If You Can in Terminal. I mean, Da Vinci Code is Ron Howard. I mean, he kept working with the same people. Polar Express is Zemeckis.
Yeah, but he also would try things like Cloud Atlas and Road to Perdition. And yeah, he'll do a Sully and A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, which feels like safe roles. I don't feel like he's chasing the dragon of fame as much anymore.
Well, he's already got it. That's why. He doesn't need to. Like, I do feel like when I heard that he had the COVID, I'm like, oh, this is going to be huge. Like, Tom Hanks is going down. Like, that going to be a lot of tears shed over him. Like, I do feel like he's kind of made it. He's just staying on top.
Yeah. Just incidentally, we've talked about doing a series like Tom Cruise in the 90s. He's one of those figures. I mean, he is one of those that, like, yeah, he means something to people because of the movies he picked and because of what he did in the 90s, that body of work, varied as though it is. He did, I think the comparison I always hear is Jimmy Stewart. He has that likable Jimmy Stewart persona.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they remade It's a Wonderful Life, he would be, well, he's a little old now, but he should have starred.
Right. He could be Mr. Potter.
And maybe they'll get his son who looks like him.
Kind of. But Zemeckis, yeah, this was also a transition moment for him where he went from blockbusters to like totally disappearing into that motion capture world for a decade. And then a lot of underseen dramas.
Oh, yeah. Polar Express. Had that happened yet?
Polar Express, Beowulf, and Christmas Carol were the next things that he did.
Okay. Wow, he did all three of those.
In a row. Then he tried to come back with a Castaway, Flight. It is about, you know, a plane accident, but it's also an alcoholism drama.
That's Denzel Washington, right?
Yeah, The Walk, which is about the walking across the tightrope of the World Trade Center.
I had no idea that was him.
Yeah, Allied. People forget that. It's the movie that broke up Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie.
I don't know anything about that one.
I saw it. It's a World War II. It's kind of like wants to be Casablanca, but doesn't quite get there. I feel like, yes, he used to be, and up to this point, was a blockbuster guy. And then he makes the films he wants to make, and maybe occasionally people come and see them. But let's find out what I missed on Christmas. Arnie, give him the plot, and we'll find out why Tom Hanks was cast away.
Tom Hanks plays time-obsessed FedEx operations manager Chuck Noland. While traveling for work on Christmas night, his plane crashes. Chuck is the only survivor, and a life raft carries him to a deserted desert island. There, Chuck has to learn to survive with only rudimentary tools, using Boy Scout skills to start a fire and a stick to spear a crab. Some FedEx packages floated ashore, and he opens them to find things he can use to survive, but he leaves one package unopened. To keep his sanity, or maybe a sign of him losing it, he talks to an anthropomorphized volleyball with a face made of Chuck's bloody handprint. Due to the brand of the volleyball, Chuck calls it Wilson. 4 years pass, and when some metal from a destroyed porta potty washes ashore, Chuck decides to try to leave the island, knowing it may well mean his death. He fashions a raft and uses the porta potty as a sail. On the trip, he tragically loses Wilson. He's finally found by a ship and he returns home to discover he'd been declared dead. His fiancée Kelly, played by Helen Hunt, has married someone else in his absence. He then takes that lone unopened FedEx package to its rightful destination and has a brief conversation with the woman to whom it was going as credits roll. I mean, plot summary can't get more simple. Man crashes on island. I almost did it to the tune of Gilligan's Island.
That would have been fun.
Simple plot summary, and the first 10 minutes of this film is a commercial, right? Like, it's shocking. This is just a FedEx commercial. Like, we are going to get your packages to Russia on time. Like, we are so fast, we're going to have child labor helping us deliver stuff.
What's with the package cam? That was the thing that got me, is like, the delivery is POV the package.
Yeah, well, you said he likes technology. Robert Zemeckis, they got a new doodad. It was probably the GoPro had just been invented. He's like, let's try it. I mean, you know, that's one thing that Zemeckis really fell in love with, is how do we use technology to enhance storytelling? And again, I went into this movie suspecting this was him resisting that urge, that this would be a movie where he was not using trickery. It's a one-man show and doesn't have anything to play off of. So how could it be about technology? But you're right. From the get-go here, there are fancy camera tricks. It made me actually think about the opening of Forrest Gump. If you remember, and I only saw the movie once, but I've never forgotten, it starts with the feather thing. Like, that's what we get here with the angel wings.
Begins and ends with the feather, just like this film is going to begin and end with a package with feathers on it.
Yeah, and they both represent the same thing. A message from God. There's something from the heavens, something angelic that is being introduced. And we have, for reasons that won't become clear until the end of the movie, this prologue about a package going from a Texas metalworks barn to Moscow, and between a woman welder and her cheating husband.
Now, I was thinking about you, Jacob, with this FedEx scene in Russia. Were they this time obsessed? Was there somebody shouting at you about being efficient and how the clock is your god?
Oh my gosh. I don't know if it was like this in Russia. I don't know how FedEx operations are over there. But no, Fred Smith, who we'll see in this film, he's the gentleman who started FedEx, came up with the idea, got the C on his college paper about the idea, the famous story, and then turned it into a very successful company. But no, they're very obsessed with like analytics and business process, and like this package goes to this place and then this place and then like there is a process for everything. I was involved with writing those processes. It gets very tedious, the level of detail they would want, and just like on time rates for like overnight packages, like 99 9.6%. That was our goal. Like, it very tight metrics, very intense, stressful company to work for at times.
Well, it does look it. I would not want to work for this raging asshole shouting about a clock and being like, go, 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 go.
So is that too much setting up the problem that, like, it's obvious, right? Like, here's somebody that's so every second of the day is accounted for. What's going to happen to them when time stops meaning anything and they're marooned for a long period of time? And is that a little too on the nose? Maybe a little.
Yeah, it's on the nose, and yet I feel like it's a missed opportunity because, I get the sense that he's dealing with time, and, you know, here he was a busybody in civilization, and then he's going to be a castaway, and things are going to go different. I don't know if I'm going to learn much about him, though. Like, I get there's a difference in the situations he's living in. I don't know how deep they're really going to analyze this character.
Yeah, I don't think that he ever misses the grind, you know? He has such bigger things to worry about. I never feel like he's bored. You know what I'm saying?
At most, he's a company man for the first, I don't know, maybe week when he won't open those packages. Like, he's that good of an employee, but he even sorts them. Like, that cracked me up. Like, sorting. If you ever see a FedEx package, those like letters on that label, like those are big deals that will tell you if it's going to get there on time or not if you sort that wrong.
Oh, yeah. When it's raining, instead of covering himself, he covers the packages.
Yep.
I thought that was funny. But I don't know that goes a whole lot. I feel that Chekhov's toothache was set up better than his workaholism.
Well, here's what I mean. Yeah, the movie is long, but it doesn't have that much time. Again, it wants to really tell you as much as it can about this character in the 20 minutes before we're in Act Two. And so we get a few things. I want to just run by you to see which ones stick with you. The first thing is, yeah, we have this kid Nikolai, and he's yelling at him, and there's this story that's told by two different people here in Russia that this guy cared so much about delivering a package that he stole a kid's bike. Are we to think in any way that he is prioritizing work over family, or that he should be raising a son and devoting more time to children because of this insertion here with Nikolai?
I didn't take it necessarily as children, but yeah, that maybe he needs to slow down if he wants to become a family man, if he wants to marry Helen Hunt's character, have kids in the future, all that, then something will probably need to change.
Yeah, with Helen Hunt, obviously, that's the story. But I mean, with children specifically, because it's never articulated in the movie, but I feel like it is maybe a regret he has when he realizes she has children.
I didn't get that. I got that he was a workaholic completely. I mean, they're driving that home again and again and again.
Yeah, couldn't miss that one.
Because they have, 20, 25 minutes of this character in civilization before he's going to crash on the island, I think they're doing very broad strokes here. You have to go with types. You can't go with deep characterizations because we don't have time to set that up and pay that off. We get that he's a nice guy. You know, we see that at the Christmas dinner and when he offers to help his coworker by referring a doctor for his wife.
No, that's not a nice guy.
You're saying there's only type to make Chuck a type? Because this is a one-man show. Like, it's all about Chuck. Like, you should develop this character.
Yeah, they have all the time in the world to develop him. But he's not a nice guy to Stan. He proves that he is emotionally inadequate. Like, he gets on the plane and they're giggling about drinking wine. And then one of the pilots brings up the fact that, oh, how is your sick wife doing? And the camera stays on Tom Hanks. You see Tom Hanks like turning away and doesn't say anything about it the whole flight. And then at the end gives this really like pathetic, get this thing fixed. I know a celebrity doctor thing. That to me tells me that he maybe stays focused on work and all of that because he doesn't like to think about when time stops or death or any of the deep, difficult emotional stuff. He seems incapable.
I got that it was awkward, but, you know, the fact that he was offering to help, the fact that it's Tom Hanks carries a lot of nice guy cachet, too.
He wasn't really offering to again, that was, if you thought that was a genuine offer, to me, that played is very much like, how do I say something as I run out the door and get away? That was like, I had to come to the funeral and like, I'll say some trite something as I hug you, but really I don't know how to deal with people on this emotional level.
Yeah, we'll see that he keeps getting the name wrong for one of the air flight crews later on when it crashes. But again, does he learn a lesson while he's on the island about that character trait of his? Like, do we see a resolution to that? I feel like they set up character traits. I don't know. Look, he's going to spend like 4 or 5 years on this island. I don't know much how he reflected on who he was, because I don't feel like ultimately that's what this movie is about, is a man going through a change because of an extraordinary event. It does that very surface level. I would expect it to be much deeper if it's a one-man show.
Well, we'll get there when we get there. I'm just talking about who they're telling us he is before he's changed into whatever he's going to become.
I take who he is. He's work obsessed. Like, that's it.
Yeah, and Jacob, you say that we have all the time in the world with him, but we don't have all the time in the world with him to see how he relates to people. And I think that's part of the issue.
But that's the writer's fault then. That's the director. Like, you develop that. Like, you could come up with that. Again, if you're going to tell me this man's going to go on an island and have a journey, I want to know who he was before it and who he is after it and why. What did that journey mean?
I was really surprised and impressed on some level with the boldness of their conceit. When 127 Hours came out, yeah, a guy gets stuck in a crevice, but he doesn't stay there. There are a lot of flashbacks throughout that time as he's sawing off his hand where we see him in other circumstance. And so it isn't claustrophobic. You aren't trapped on that extreme place with him. You don't feel pinned down there because he's always going back in his mind to people that he knows and replaying conversations. I assumed that we would have a lot more of Kelly, Helen Hunt, in this movie, because they barely have any time to establish them as a couple. Again, it's a bold choice that we won't have flashbacks, but it also makes it really hard for us to care about the relationship.
Yeah, so little time that the first time I saw this film, I thought they were married, that they were husband and wife, and I had a very negative reaction at the end of this film. Like, this time I'm like, oh, okay, they're not married yet. Oh, okay, it comes off different at the end then, but like, yeah, it's just blazing through, like they're at Christmas dinner and a whole lot of conversation going on. And again, I feel like I should be learning things about Chuck here, and no, he's a busybody. He's always busy, because if you work for FedEx, that's how it is.
And they're a little old for the, like, I know that they got them because Tom Hanks is a huge star and Helen Hunt was a huge TV star, but like the fact that, I mean, yes, I'm in middle-aged and going back to grad school. Yes, you can be working on your dissertation, but the fact that she hasn't had kids yet and wants to, like, her biological clock would be really ticking at this point. They would have to have had that conversation.
They never say anything about kids, but it's hard to understand everything that's going on at that Christmas dinner with everybody talking over everybody else, but it's mostly about her, because they mentioned she's been married before, and Tom Hanks says Helen Hunt is still a bit hung up on the guy who she used to be married to, who was a lawyer, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, again, how old was she? About 40?
She would have been 35 when this was filmed.
Okay, all right.
Really?
That's
okay.
That's a little bit younger, but I feel like these characters should be even a decade younger than that.
Yeah, putting her next to Hanks, he feels very old.
Yeah, they should be 20-somethings.
And Hanks, I looked him up. He's my age when he was filming this. He was 44.
Again, and 44 for movie audiences, mainstream, you would just normally want to cast these people with like 25-year-olds, 30-year-olds, maybe. Like, it's these feel like younger people problems, that they haven't made time to get married and start a family, but they're being played by 44-year-olds.
Well, I mean, 100% of that is, this is Tom Hanks' movie. He came up with the story concept. He then went to William Broyles Jr. and said, let's write something, and then got Zemeckis involved. But Tom Hanks was producing this, and this was a Tom Hanks initiated project.
Yeah, no, I get that he wasn't going to produce and let somebody younger play this part. He wanted this part, but the character, I just have a hard time getting a bead on this couple, partly for the ages of the actors playing them, and this partly because, again, it's just one cute scene at a Christmas dinner, and then, you know, they race to the airport, because I guess he doesn't have to answer the pager, but because he's a workaholic, he feels like he's going to. Like, that should have probably been better underlined than it is.
I think the reason they don't have kids is because that would be too tragic. Parents take children in film, sometimes in my mind too seriously. And if he had kids, I have a feeling a lot of the parents in the audience wouldn't be able to disassociate themselves from how tragic it is he's lost his children. Whereas here, you can make it a sweet romance with him pining for Helen Hunt, and that's sweet. Whereas Children Without a Father, there's nothing sweet about that.
Well, yeah, we'll discuss how sweet it is when we get to the middle of the movie. Do you like them as a couple? I guess I feel like if he's always this busy and she's doing her dissertation, if they don't get together, is that a tragedy? I mean, okay, there's people date and then it doesn't work out for whatever reason. They still like each other, but it just wasn't right and they didn't stay together. Like,
I've seen Tom Hanks have a lot of relationships in a lot of movies, a lot of rom-coms, and this one feels like a match made in hell. I honestly think the problem is casting Helen Hunt, but part of it is the way the story is told. The scene with them arranging their day planners could be cute, but here, it's just, to me, it says that they're not making time for each other.
Right.
Yeah, the fact that when he gives her some presents, he's like, here's some hand towels, and I know he says it's a joke later and he has a real present, but like, even as a joke, man, hand towels, I would never give a woman I was interested, I would never give my wife any hand towels.
I did that to Marjorie. I gave her, she hates Lord of the Rings, so for Christmas, I gave her a Gimli action figure, but in the box, I put a diamond ring.
Yeah, that's what you gotta do if you're gonna give someone a Gimli toy.
Although they, like, this was the moment he should propose, right? But they want to make it seem like, no, I'll be back on New Year's and then I'll propose. Like, that was a kind of an awkward, like, okay. You don't want to make it seem like they've actually promised anything to each other because of the conceit of the movie and the fact that she's going to be with another guy when he gets back.
And just to talk about the mechanics, look, I worked for FedEx. I'm trying to figure out what Tom Hanks does for FedEx in this film. Like, he just travels internationally. Like, he gets paged to go to Malaysia to do what? To unload packages?
Right. To scream at people. Yeah, I'm in Moscow today. Next week, I'll be in Africa. And now, yeah, I've got to go to Southeast Asia. Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, there were people that traveled a lot with FedEx. I was a trainer for a time, and I traveled all over the country. But internationally, you usually have people set up internationally, like you're living abroad, running things.
And it comes up last minute, like, oh, wait, we definitely need you to do that right now at Christmas.
Yeah, I was racking my mind trying to think, you know, it's been 5 years since I worked for him. I'm like, what would he be doing? I couldn't figure it out.
Mm-mm.
I honestly thought, to go with a Pulp Fiction reference, he was the wolf for FedEx. They had a problem. They sent in the wolf. That was him.
Right. But again, it's built on the premise that he probably should have said no. He could have easily said no, but he was driven to, by making the company better, because he believed in FedEx and time and all of that, that if he personally didn't get involved, that packages at the holidays would slow down. And
I will say that is accurate. Like, FedEx employees always work on Christmas, either delivering packages that didn't get delivered before Christmas or working at stations so people could come pick them up on Christmas. Like, you work on Christmas if you work for FedEx.
Yeah, it seems a little contrived is all I'm saying. It seems a little contrived. And unfortunately, it's really rushed the setup of their relationship, which is very important to set up. Like, it's really important that I like them as a couple in order for to see them pulled apart the way that they're going to be.
Yeah, he's going to spend so much time looking at that picture of Helen Hunt that she put in that pocket watch of her grandfather that she gave him for Christmas. Like, you want that to mean something. You want to feel what he's feeling whenever he's staring at that picture throughout this film. And I never do.
And again, that obvious way to write this would be, well, we see all of their moments in flashback as he's trying to live on the island. He's thinking about what life is without her and going back to the time when he had her. But I guess it's in the character that they've never slowed down to actually, I can't figure it out. Have they made time for each other? There's a lot of photos of them running around the world together. So I think they do know each other. I do think that they're ready to get married. How long have they been dating, do you imagine?
I'd say a couple years, maybe three. But the fact that she's still hung up on her ex, or that's at least what Tom Hanks says about her, makes me think it could be shorter.
But not like a decade? Like, not since he was 25? Like, I couldn't really get a sense of it. And I think that that's an unfortunate flaw of the film, is that it couldn't find a way to establish what the norm was.
I both feel we spend too much time in Memphis and yet don't get enough information out of Memphis.
But I definitely gotta agree that with Ed Powell, that when we get to the plane crash, wow, it is a stunner. It is one of the great ones. I mean, Zemeckis is good at this. He, in Flight, he had a good one as well. But yeah, this is Amazing.
And Arnie, I'm sure you watched whatever extras were there. I just read the wiki, so I don't know how accurate it is, but FedEx, it said, was very concerned. Like, oh, you want to crash one of our planes into the ocean? Like, how is that going to make us look? They were worried, and I think they got heavily involved. Like, I read, you know, whenever the military's aircrafts or helicopters are featured in a film, like, they have a lot of say over editing and how everything's portrayed. I read, at least, that FedEx had a lot of say, or they were involved throughout this picture, because they didn't want to come off negative, of course.
Yeah, actually, initially they were panicky about it, but they ended up really liking it. I didn't think they were too involved past the script stage.
Yeah, I think that later, like Helen Hunt has a line saying, they never found out why the plane went down, and that's because they don't want this to reflect badly on the company. And so for reasons, there's just an explosion, and it's an act of God.
Yeah, there's a storm. They're 200 miles off course. I guess later on we're told that they were trying to get around the storm, but there's cargo that's loose and kind of moving around as they're going through this turbulence. I'm never sure why this plane crashed.
Yeah, I took it as the storm because they're acting very panicky about the storm, but it's also convenient because the storm, they go off course for it so that they can go around it.
They still end up in the middle of it anyway, even though they're 200 miles away from it. It's a really big storm.
And it knocked out their communications, so they weren't able to tell anyone where they were, so that the search parties aren't going to be able to find Hanks because of all of this.
I mean, I'm going to call it what it is. This is a parable. It is happening around Christmas. There are Christian themes. This is an act of God.
Yeah, angel wings on that package.
God is testing Job. That is what is going to happen here, and we're going to have a lot of religious illusions as Tom Hanks learns what he's going to learn in his exile.
Okay, I'll have to think about it. I think you're onto something, but I don't see the payoff. Job, I knew he was a wealthy dude, had a lot of kids, a lot of livestock. When all that gets taken away, I get it. That's tragic. His kids die, his livestock dies, he gets boils all over his skin. I understand Job's angst. Here, I like the situation. I like survival stories. Like, I don't think this is high art, but I love seeing, like, just a dude, like, trying to figure out how to live on this island.
Yeah, and I mean, again, let's just take a moment to appreciate the 5 minutes we have of him getting there. Like, that crash and the, you know, it snapping in half and him almost sinking with it and floating to the top where it's still loud. I was really impressed that, like, you would think after the plane crashed, like, it would be no sound, but, like, the engines are still running.
Yeah, the engine's still going. He almost gets sucked up.
And I honestly had a moment of panic while he was in the plane. It was filling with water. He had the life raft with him. But man, I just started to have a panic attack about the thought of a plane filling with water, but you can't get out. I mean, I knew he was going to get to an island. I knew what movie I was watching, but how was he going to get out of a plane filled with water? That got me.
Stuart, you got to know, like, you're saying Zemeckis, this is his quiet film where he gets away from technology. Like, this is a big action, for lack of a better word, piece here. Like, this plane crash and him getting out and popping up on the surface. You know, I don't think they went to the middle of the ocean to do this.
No, yeah, obviously, we can tell now because CGI has gotten better that a lot of this is computer-generated waves and what have you, but it's still impressive. Again, the lighting, the sound effects, all of that, and it does feel like he's been completely cast out from all of his work, his people he knows, society at large. He is a lost man. Again, could have just perished in this raft here, but miraculously has landed at a place of no escape. Once you get here, the waves will keep you trapped here forever. You can't row away in your half-deflated raft.
I do have to ask, are there deserted islands anymore? Like, I feel like millionaires have probably bought up any small islands that would be deserted.
I was thinking Elon Musk probably owns this and just hasn't got to it. All right, if I can be completely on it, you know, he can only be on a portion of the island because there's a big cliff. And there was this movie called Where the Boys Aren't Three, Shipwrecked Showgirls.
That's a porno. Lesbian porn.
And
I mean, why is that coming up for you?
And the whole movie is they're stranded on a desert island.
The whole movie is cunnilinguistic. Come on.
And then they find out that if they just walked to the other half of the island and it was a beach resort, that's what I was thinking about. It's like, right on the other side of the cliff. What if he's at Club Med?
Well, you know what? You could have brought up another example, Full House. That happened to the Tanners, and they just walked around that island and ended up playing with the Beach Boys in a concert in Hawaii. It was amazing.
It is strange how often the Beach Boys showed up on Full House, but I didn't see that episode, and I've seen Where the Boys Are three of handful of times.
A handful, no pun intended.
Wow. Okay. All right. Be that as it may, and I'm glad that's something that you're enjoying. This movie, we're talking about this movie.
No lesbians in this one.
I'm just saying, we don't know that he isn't on a resort island in response to, are there desert islands?
I think you would hear the rave music.
Well, yeah, no. Where did they film this? Did they find some portion of an island that they could do this? I mean, the shot of the island when he's coming upon shore, that looks like real island, not some kind of soundstage.
Yeah, it was filmed in Fiji.
I feel like some of it looks real and some of it. There are definitely shots where I'm like, oh, they didn't go to an island at all. And it is a little disappointing when I can see that.
When he was at the top of the mountain, I could clearly see he was not in a real location.
It's a beautiful shot, but it feels CGI as hell. All those waves around him, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The beach, the cave, all of that's practical location that they scouted and found this area in Fiji. But when you get to the other stuff, like I said, some of this was filmed in a parking lot. I could tell watching this, and then it confirmed for me in the bonus features, because it's on an island, they didn't want to take a whole bunch of lighting equipment and stuff, so they never filmed at night. They did everything post-process. Zemeckis is like, we don't need to shoot at night. I can make it night and post. And it just looks fake.
Day for night.
Yeah, it does. I mean, there are some shots better than others. And then you have to realize it's been 20 years. And we're just kind of spoiled by what they can do now as opposed to then.
Yeah, I agree. But it's just, when I saw it at the time, I didn't see the seams. Now, maybe some of this, you know, again, I've brought this up a few times. I want to drive it home. Some of the early CGI effects worked better on film than they do when transferred to digital. So that could be what I'm seeing here. I don't remember having any problem with the effects in theaters, but when I was watching this on Blu-ray, I was let down.
Yeah, Blu-ray's unforgiving sometimes, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I will say, though, I liked watching Chuck's evolution. Like, when he first gets on this island, you know, of course, he goes and gathers up all those FedEx packages and sorts them into the right piles. But, you know, he has these attempts to, like, call for help where he, like, you know, spells help in the sand and then half of that gets washed away from the tide that comes in. And, of course, it's way too small. A plane would never see that. Like, so I do like, again, I think the fun of this film, at least for me, is going, oh, how would I react to this? And, yeah, like, these early attempts he makes, like, this is what you do when you're trying to figure out, like, how to deal with this situation.
And it does feel like God, nature, the island itself is preventing him. Like the fact that like he has that moment where he's like, I'm just going to row past there. And it's really like these endless waves. It's this like one tidal wave that he just can't get through.
Reminded me of the Truman Show.
Yeah, it does feel like he's, again, been brought here to be taught a lesson. Is the way that I take it. That God wants him to be here and nowhere else. And he kind of looks like a wise man, like a biblical, like he's got his tidy whities around the towel on his head. And it does feel like a parody almost of a religious film. But yeah, he's going to get stigmata. And there's so much of that in this movie that I definitely see it through that vantage point. This is a parable about being tested by your creator. And being asked, does he need to become a better person? Do we feel in the beginning that he is in any way, a person that needs to be corrected?
You know, as I think through this film, like that story of him stealing the kid's bike, that's just showing his ingenuity. He was like made for this. He was made to be stranded. So like maybe those weren't character flaws.
Yeah, it does serve him.
You know, you mentioned Job. And one thing about Job is that he was devout and Satan said, well, he's only devout because he has a good life. Let's see if he's devout with a bad life. And there I can see it. But there's never a time I felt like Chuck, no land, get it, see, no land. I never felt like he was such a bad person that he needed to go and atone or have penance or any of that. His priorities were a little out of whack. Maybe. I mean, also, maybe he's on a career fast path and he's going to be able to buy Helen Hunt a giant diamond after a little more work. There's nothing wrong with a good work ethic.
Yeah, right. But again, I do think we saw her disappointment And, you know, he made the promise that he'd be back at New Year's, and it's pretty clear that's not going to happen. At this point in the movie, I don't know how long he's going to be. It's really when the captain washes up and he writes in the tombstone, it's the year 1995 that he died, that I went, oh, okay, it's going to be like half a decade on this island.
Yeah, and the most telling thing to me is when that crew member washes up, like, he had always said his name wrong, and like, he looks at his ID, he's like, oh, this was his name, like, he didn't even really know this guy, and he's still gonna, you know, pillage whatever equipment he has, a flashlight, he's gonna take those shoes, have to cut the toes out because they're too small, but like, he does give the guy a burial and a tombstone, I guess.
He always called him Captain Allen, and he was Albert, and yeah, that signifies that, again, this man did not slow down and spend the time to emotionally be present, just like he didn't want to deal with that man and his dying wife. He didn't want to really know anybody. He was afraid to get to know people. And that's why he was so prone to always like be racing ahead.
I get what you're saying there, Stuart. And I noticed that on the island, there's nobody he misses, nothing from his own family. Nothing calls to him except for Kelly.
Well, the funny thing is, I feel like she's an abstraction to him. He doesn't really know her because he doesn't spend any time with her before. And now that he's on the island, what he knows is what he misses, you know, like the sense of her. But like, I don't know if they have a shared enough history that he can recall memories together because he's not doing that. So I don't know what he misses. Is he just missing human contact? Is he missing sexual intercourse? Or does he actually miss Kelly? I don't know.
And the thing is, we're not going to have Chuck talking to himself. We'll have another, and I'll put it in quotation marks, character pop up later that gives him a reason to talk. But yeah, early on, it does seem more about the survival than, you know, what he thinks of, you know, his situation back home. He's hearing sounds, these thudding sounds throughout the night, and thinks it's an animal or something trying to sneak up on him. Ends up being coconuts. Very dangerous. Those things hit you in the head, might kill you.
Yeah, moving to California, I realize how deadly even palm fronds can be.
Oh, yeah, and living in Florida, I know the pain of trying to open a coconut.
Oh, my gosh, they are so hard. This movie gets that 100% right.
Yes, I have felt its pain. I have smashed those against so many rocks and things. But it's obvious, during these early days, he thinks he's going to be rescued. That's why he keeps the FedEx packages. When he gives up hope of rescue is when he opens the packages. But until then, he's merely trying to just get along, thinking, it'll be a day, then the next day, oh, it'll be today. And he just keeps going. He doesn't even seem to be grateful that he was the survivor. You know, I'd be kissing the ground and never be on a plane again.
And I feel like this is where, look, there's other directors that could do it. Like, if you had Terrence Malick doing this, I feel like you'd get a lot of similar shots of the scenery and not the character talking, but I would get some kind of emotional vibe, like what this character is going through. This, to me, especially early on, just feels so much like a survival movie. Just like, hey, let's watch this guy, let's watch a lone episode of Survivor where there's no one else to vote off the island and see what he does, which there's fun in that, but I'm hoping for something deeper.
You mentioned Terrence Malick, and that's what a great idea. Would love to see that movie, but we do know what that would look like. It would be wall-to-wall voiceover, and this movie takes a very brave stance of not doing that at all. Should it have done that? I think it would be easier to watch if we heard more about what was going on in his head. But Zemeckis has taken the tack. I'm not going to use that trick. We're only going to see him talk to a volleyball. Most of this movie is very quiet. You know, like there is just the actual sound effects of the beach with very little artistic interpretation in the sound design.
Oh my God, there's so much artistic interpretation in the sound design. Never, ever listen to this commentary. Ever. Because yes, Zemeckis is on the commentary for a third of the time. Two-thirds of the time is the Foley artist. O-M-F-ing-G. Oh dear God, do I know so much about how to create the sound of a wave, which is not actually by recording a wave, and how every sound design is meant to heighten the emotion, and how you can't do panning sounds because it's going to take people out of the film, and oh fuck, did he overanalyze every sound. That's his job, but oh fuck. So
no, Let me qualify what I'm saying. We're not going to have a character talk about his problems and himself to a great extent. The drama that we get comes from the sound design, as one might actually hear, like of waves crashing and stuff. We're not going to hear voices of God. We're not going to hear Hunt's voice, you know, drifting over. He'll talk later about how she was on the island with him, but it really is only in his head. I mean, they could have done it. They could have filmed her materializing and talking to him. Like, she could have been this mermaid that came out of the water, but they made a choice to make it, I guess the word would be, realistic.
What I found really interesting, and not the commentary, but in the other behind-the-scenes features, was that Broyles wasn't quite sure what to write, so he got some survivalists and went to an island. And he couldn't open a coconut, so that became the story. And he couldn't start a fire, so that became a story. Everything that happens here is literally something that happened to him. But what this movie was going to be is Tom Hanks doubled. There was going to be like evil Tom Hanks and good Tom Hanks talking to Tom Hanks. And so you'd have kind of like we had last week when we were talking about Secret Window with all the Johnny Depps. You were going to have a lot of Tom Hanks giving thoughts. But while he was out there, Broyles had this volleyball and they just started making jokes and started referring to it as Wilson. And then he's like, that's it. We're not going to have multiple Tom Hanks. We're going to bring in this volleyball.
And that is something I noticed watching this time, that there is a logic to this film. And I know when you guys did Back to the Future, another Zemeckis film, like you talked, maybe it's a little bit too clever how it sets everything up at the beginning and then just knocks down every single one of those dominoes like perfectly as it goes through the film. But I do feel there is a logic here. Like Tom Hanks can't live on coconuts. He's hungry. Can't catch the fish. So what does he do? He gets a crab. That's easy to catch, but he pulls that leg off. It's all goo. You got to cook that thing if you want that hard meat and that not that gross goo.
That was awfully gross. I had no idea. And I used to catch crab in Florida. I didn't know they were liquid.
Yeah. So then he goes, you know, he has to make fire. And then while he's making fire, he injures his hand. And that's where he creates Wilson. There is. And again, I think if you're watching Survivalist or if I'm on an island, yeah, I need food. Oh, this raw food is gross. I need to make fire. Like, there is a logic to it that I could kind of appreciate watching it this time as just a survival movie.
Yeah, I think it works best as that. I honestly do feel like the neatest stuff is like, how would you make it and projecting yourself into like, okay, that's how I would make fire, you know. Like the religious overtones and the romance, I wish I was feeling that stuff. I wish that that was dramatized in a way where I really felt pulled by that stuff. But my heart goes out to this guy mostly because he's got to figure out how to take care of himself.
Yeah, I didn't see the religious overtones you're discussing with the stigmata and things. I just took it as wounds. He also cuts his leg open. I don't remember that in the Bible.
His feet. Jesus gets those feet pierced.
But the stigmata actually gives him Wilson. You know, it's through that that he's able to start communicating and having a relationship. And this is a character that, again, never slowed down to have relationships. So he is now having a relationship with, I'm going to just call it the big G. He's having a relationship with God.
Yeah, going back to that funeral he had for Albert, his whole eulogy is, so that's it. Like, yeah, so the fact that he's going to be holding long conversations, I don't know if they're long, but he is going to have more in-depth conversations with Wilson than he did, again, this crew member who he couldn't even learn his name.
But the stuff that's impactful is like, oh my God, what if you did have a toothache and you couldn't eat coconuts? What would you do on this island? I guess I would take a rock to my face.
Well, hopefully, yeah, someone was shipping ice skates and you had that package. Like, I do like when he finally decides to open the packages, I do feel like it plays it about right. Like, there might be one useful thing, like those ice skates. He uses that VHS tapes. He uses those for, like, rope, you know, divorce papers, a dress. I do like, was he going to make an outfit to wear, like, make a jacket to wear at night with that dress when he holds it up?
As soon as I saw the lace, I'm like, it's a net. You can catch things with it.
Yeah, he catches some unappetizing fish, and then later he's got a windsock. So I feel like maybe some of that fabric.
Okay, he used it for something then.
I actually think that's part of the moral here, is that all of this stuff that seems to be, I mean, what could be more worthless than VHS cassettes in 2000?
But in 1995, when he crashed, I was buying those hand over fist.
That's true. They meant more then. But my point is that I think that he learns to value everything, even the things that seem to have no value.
And I do enjoy the survivalist aspect of this. I agree with you, Jacob. It falls like dominoes, but You know, when I'm thinking about it, if I were trapped on an island, I'd look for the three basic necessities. Water, food, shelter, you know? And that's kind of how he goes about it. The coconuts bring him liquid, and then the cave gives him shelter, although he also builds a makeshift tent. And then, yeah, the food, he eats that one fish raw because he's just so hungry it's been days. And then, yes, I will learn how to make a fire.
You know, it's telling that in the times we're living at, my first thought, him walking into the cave is, don't do that, you're going to get a coronavirus. That was literally what I thought.
Why a cave?
Because the bats would be in there.
Oh, no. I do feel like that would be a cold, damp place to sleep at night.
But it's about 80 minutes and we get the jump. Like, I feel like it's a pretty long setup. Like, I can feel my patience being a little bit tested, but then we get to 4 years later, and Chuck is skinny, got a giant blonde beard, loincloth. He's not just spearing the fish, he's throwing the spears and catching them long distance.
And there is a Mandela effect about this movie I discovered while doing research. People firmly believe that there's a scene in between where the 4 years later, and they said they saw it in theaters or they saw it on video, but it was removed for DVD and Blu-ray, where you saw him go up to the top of that cliff and try to hang himself and use the wooden dummy.
No, that was never in it. I know that was never in it.
It makes no sense narratively to be like, 3 years later, I try to kill myself. 1 year later still. And Zemeckis did say that was in an early draft of the script.
You see him climb that mountain. You see that tree that he's going to talk about later that he tested.
You mean that crucifix? I mean, literally, Jesus Christ. Talk about your religious imagery. Tell me, anyone could miss that.
Yeah. Okay, yes.
Yeah, I thought he had found God on the island when I saw the cross, but
yeah, I mean, that's pretty in your face.
But I just found it interesting that even IMDb trivia lists that this scene exists.
People, Sinbad was never a genie. The Berenstain Bears never changed the way they spelled their last name. And Tom Hanks never tried hanging himself before it's revealed later on in this film. Get over it.
Yeah.
I think it's because people remember that detail and he suffers so much. And the movie's so long that I can imagine, yeah, if some years passed, I might think that I saw the scene of him doing it. But he certainly suffers enough. God knows he just goes through so much torment here. But he's actually got the idea, once the porta potty shows up, that he can get off.
Well, even before that, I mean, they established that Chuck is a smart guy. Like, he uses some math that I wouldn't be, you know, able to do on an island to figure out the search radius. And like, oh, there's no way they're ever going to find me. And he's got a calendar, we'll see. Like, he's figured out in the cave, like, where the sun hits, like, roughly what month it is. So, I don't know. You could say it's God and divine intervention. The dude's smart. Like, he's using science.
He's never given up on time. The interesting thing is, one would think that at some point he would say, oh, fuck it. But he knows exactly how many days he's there. Like, when he's, like, leaving, it's like 1,500 days. I damn know every damn day, and I'm going to write it that way. Like,
yeah, he says that thing that he said in Russia, you know, about time to Wilson. Like, he's still, again, that's why it's hard for me to accept this as, like, some, I'm going to go on a journey, and it's going to change the way I was because I was flawed. Because he's using those exact principles to get off the island.
Yeah.
And this is the type of thing I'm saying when I said Zemeckis, in my mind, became more interested in technology than story, is yes, I view this as an interesting adventure, you know, a modern day Robinson Crusoe type thing, but I don't see a huge character arc here. I don't see him learning mistakes that we saw when he was out among people that he had to change now that he's alone and that would change him when he returned home. I don't see an arc.
I think it's supposed to come from Wilson. I'm not going to argue that it's done well, but the idea that he gets frustrated and throws it and then I want you back, and some of that is, yeah, just comedy, but it also shows that he's forged a relationship and he was able to walk away from relationships before in the few scenes where we saw him interacting with other people. And now that's not easy for him to do.
Well, and it's around this time we've talked about it that where it's revealed he needs more rope and there's a place where it's already made. I guess he's exhausted all the resources to make it. He has to climb up that mountain again, and he made rope to hang himself, but he tested it with that tree. I guess we're not going to find that out right away, but we know there is a suicide attempt at some point.
I mean, yeah, it goes undersold, but I think everyone realizes, like, how did the... He's arguing with Wilson.
Well, it's a noose. We know what he tried to do.
It starts out with Wilson, and he's like, I know, you know where I can get more rope. I'm not going up there. Like, it's this weird, crazy fight, and you're like, well, did he have a mental break? No. He's being asked by himself to remember a very dark time. And the movie will spell it out when we get to the very end. But it's enough just to see that, yes, the noose is hanging off the crucifix tree. And he's got to go back and get it if he has any hope of getting off of this island. He needs that rope. And he also needs a porta potty. I mean, again, that the key to him getting off from previous years is that he's building this, I guess, fiberglass sail, which kind of shows up. It's got to be a 2001 reference, right? The way he's hunkered around that thing.
When he sticks it up in the sand and it's like the monolith.
It's totally a monolith moment. I know they're doing that.
It is kind of funny that it's a porta potty. That's his salvation here. But he'd still be on that island right now, right? If that didn't show up, like that seems to be the genesis of like, oh, I could actually get off of this island. Like, this is something, I don't know if he realizes he could use it as a sail or what, but like, that's what inspires him. And he starts doing the rope and he's got, what, a month and a half to get all ready.
Yeah, it also reminds us that like he was in the bathroom when the whole plane broke up. So it's kind of taking us back to the idea of what he left in society. It's a visual reference that has me thinking about, oh, right, the world that he left behind and how will he get there? And yeah, it ends up, the way I read it, when he actually sets sail, this was the thing that helped him clear that tidal wave that wouldn't let him go before.
Yeah, he needed that extra boost. He needed that wind power to get over that final wave. And it also provides shelter from the sun, which, like, it's a shame he loses that. Like, I feel bad for his skin. There's got to be some skin cancer going on after he gets back to the mainland.
Yeah, he looks, I've got to say, like, Hanks is a physically transformative actor. Maybe he doesn't get enough credit for that, but yeah, he actually, I didn't know that actually, Arnie, about the year-long filming. I assumed it was all digital. He wore dots and they made his skin look this way. But yeah, the fact that he's lost all the weight and his hair has gone blonde, like I didn't even know he was a blonde man. Like, it is a striking physical transformation that has me with this character entirely because of his bad luck.
Of course, now that you've said the religious stuff, he looks like Jesus.
Yeah, well, again, it happened on Christmas, and there's so much of that. Here out in the water, like, there's whales, and I'm thinking about Jonah. Like, they're definitely, in many ways, trying to evoke the idea that this has been some kind of passion, some kind of test that he's had to go through.
I gotta ask you about those whales. When he gets out in the ocean, okay, we'll see a whale the first time. The second time Wilson has floated away and we'll hear that whale spout, it'll spout water and wake up Chuck. And then again, when the cargo ship is going by, we'll hear the whale again spout some water and wake him up. Is that whale in his imagination?
Or is it God trying to say, hey, here's your ride? I mean, this is the vantage point that I'm seeing everything at this point.
I don't like it.
Well, I mean, again, religion means different things to different people and some people will see that as a strength.
This feels very faith affirming. I don't know. It doesn't feel challenging, and I want to be challenged when I see a film.
Just going to put it out there as an agnostic, like, I still like stories that are about man's relationship to faith.
As an atheist, I like that. I find it fascinating.
Yeah, I can definitely go with a story that's going to show me how people connect with the world, with the universe, with their origins. I always think that's really powerful.
As a separate atheist, I find these stories trite and dull. And
well, this story is trite and dumb when it comes to religion, but I do like it when it treats it seriously and deep. Let me put it that way.
I like the attempt. Always, I like the attempt that people try to ask big questions about where we come from and what our relationship is with whoever made us. And I think that this movie has tried to be the first connection this man has had that's meaningful is really interesting. But the problem that I keep bumping up against is I don't feel like Chuck himself is a very interesting person.
Yeah, you have filled in a lot of gaps, read between a lot of lines to come up with a backstory for him, which that's fine. That's what you do when you watch a movie, when there's gaps there and you're trying to fill things in. I just, to me, that's a problem with this film, is I wish Chuck had a stronger viewpoint. Whatever his viewpoint was, I wish it was stronger.
I want to reaffirm that I'm enjoying this movie on an adventure capacity. When he's out there on that raft and he loses Wilson, I remember being tore the F up in theaters that he lost Wilson.
Does he not know how to swim? Which seems crazy, being on a desert island for 4 years. He seems to be struggling to go get Wilson.
No, we saw him swimming. I mean, he was out there fishing.
He was dragging the raft. He can't get away from the raft.
Yeah. He has to pick. He had to pick between his friend and his means of survival. And he picked wisely, by the way, because
yes,
it is a volleyball and it is not a person.
And when he gets back, they sold them at many sports stores for $49.99. Wilson actually put out the Wilson ball.
I read that. I don't remember ever seeing those, but yes, replicate.
Is it young Wilson or with his hair grown out Wilson? Because he let himself go, too. Like, he's got some kind of plant sticking out of him 4 years later.
He's got a hairdo. His hair grew as well.
Yeah, I liked that it mirrored the fingers. Like, you know, the handprint just became...
Yeah, was it replica blood on those volleyballs that they're selling in the sporting section?
Yes, it was. I was buying some sneaks and I looked up and there was a whole row of Wilsons for sale. And I even looked it up, and right now, if you want one of them, they sell for about retail on eBay, about $50.
Okay, not a collector's item then.
But yeah, he loses Wilson, and then I felt really bad for him when he loses his sail. Like I say, I don't necessarily care about the character either, but I'm projecting a lot because of Tom Hanks, and then just being a human being in this situation, when he loses that sail, I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah, that is the fun, is just projecting yourself into the situation. Look, I'm an Eagle Scout. At one time, I could rub sticks and make a fire. I don't know if I could do it anymore, but, you know, it'd be kind of neat to be in the situation. It'd be horrible to be in the situation, but kind of neat to imagine it. But yeah, when that sail goes away, that's all, again, like I said, that's his shelter from the sun. Like, I'm thinking, oh, would I climb underneath the raft and kind of just use that as shelter and breathe through the cracks in it or something? Like, again, for me, there's fun in this film, and that's it, to project yourself into it and how you deal with the situation.
Unfortunately is the word I would use. Unfortunately, that is the best stuff, because it's not what I want to be getting from the movie.
No.
But I do feel like that's when I am the most engaged. And I do feel really terrible when he lets go of that oar. The feeling like, oh, I'm just rudderless now, and this thing is barely, like, staying afloat. Like, the fact that he's all but given up here, and, I mean, yeah, he's a message in a bottle. Like, there's the chances of his survival are ridiculously low. But, again, I think we can look at the hand of God. The same thing that brought him down is allowing a freighter to pass by, and the whale wakes him up, and he's into the third act.
And like Ed Powell said, this ending feels really weird after spending so much time on the island to try to see him reacclimate.
Are you shocked that there's like 40 minutes left in this movie? Because my memory was that there wasn't enough time. Like, I wanted this movie to be about PTSD from this situation. Have the first half hour of him on an island, and then an hour and a half or whatever of him coming back to the mainland after years and dealing with that. Coming back now, okay, they do give it 40 minutes. But I don't feel like they tackle what someone like this would really be going through.
Well, they start. They start with Stan, believe it or not. They have Stan be the guy, bring him ice and put him on the plane and give him a suit. Like, he looks pretty much like he did in the beginning, thinner, but with a little tinge of blonde. I did like that touch of blonde that he still has in his hair that just lets you know he's still got a little bit of that wildness in him. And yeah, Stan is, this is where, like, it's just so clumsy that he's like, I'm sorry I wasn't there for Mary's funeral. Yes, you need a moment where you acknowledge you were not a good friend to him, but in, like, blunt dialogue like this coming out of the blue when you were shipwrecked at an island, I don't think that that's the way to pull that off.
Yeah, you don't apologize because of a plane crash. Oh, I'm so sorry I wasn't there for you because of my plane crashing.
Yeah.
Sorry I almost died.
Yeah, that sounds like you're begging for people to, you know, like, oh, no, that's okay. You, like, it's a little bit false modesty, but yeah, whatever.
Yeah, and FedEx is having like this big celebration outside. Mr. Big from Sex and the City walks in. Chris Knopf, who is now Helen Hunt's husband. Did he know Chris Knopf's character before he left?
Yes, he was a dental surgeon who had done a root canal on him.
That's right, okay.
Dr. Spaulding, get it, referred him to Knopf for a root canal.
Spalding because of the sports company volleyball?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't get that, but okay. And I still don't know if that's a joke, but okay, thanks for helping me with that. All right, so yes, the irony is that the dentist appointment that he should have done instead of prioritizing and getting on the plane, that dentist wound up marrying. I mean, again, that's really pat, right? Like that all these missed opportunities have now, I mean, it's what you do when you're telling a Hollywood story. You set things up in the beginning so you can bring it all home at the end. But it does feel rather clumsy that it's all kind of coming together in this way. I do like the fact that they're giving time to his readjustment. It would not be satisfying to have him come back and hug Helen Hunt and she's been waiting all this time.
I agree. And yet I feel like what we get here isn't satisfying. I understand she has gotten married, but he doesn't even seem all that hurt by it.
No, what? I mean, he's definitely hurt by it, but he's in shock. I mean, I think he's just been, you know, like he's still processing. But you're definitely supposed to, I mean, come on, they're gonna have a running to you in the rain, kissing and hugging scene. I mean, this is the stuff of the Notebook, you know, like they're definitely going to tell you he cares about her a lot.
Yeah, but she never got that PhD and like she decided to have kids instead. And I don't know. He's like, are you going to go back? Is him asking if she'd ever go back and get that PhD? Is that like a veiled reference to would you get back with me? Would you go back to that old life you could have?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, and I've seen good movies, like, deal with that. I mean, there was a little movie with Sean Penn, She's So Lovely, that, like, it was all about that issue about, like, I was out of your life, and now I'm back, and I'm asking you to destroy your happy home for me, which is an incredible thing to ask, and you feel like in that movie that Robin Wright just might do it, and in fact has to do it, is compelled to do it. Here, because we never established what their relationship meant, and they never spent much time together, it seemingly anyway, what does it matter? You know, what does it matter that she moved on?
Yeah, and I just think because of the scene of them together in the car, and he's like, you have to go back, I just don't see him acting as really broken up. I mean, yes, shock maybe, but I don't see him devastated the way I would expect. And, you know, he's going to have that big speech, and it's a bad speech. It is worse than the speechifying of Philadelphia when he gets back with Stan as like, I miss Kelly. I wanted to be with Kelly. But it was more important that I had her with me on that island.
Yeah, it's like for a movie that dared to not use dialogue for so long, now that they have to do it, you wish that they hadn't. You wish that this whole movie was a silent film or with sound effects, because it is the worst part of the movie when people try to put into words what they've gone through. It feels like sermonizing that just needed about 5 more drafts.
Stan, however, is a saint, because the last time he saw this guy, like you said, was weird about his wife having cancer, and now Stan's going to be there for him through everything.
Yeah, they make it so easy. I think that's the problem, is I like provocation. I like movies that challenge me, that make me go, oh, I want this and I want that, and it won't give me both, and how do I rectify it? And here, I mean, they're all going to basically land on the note that it all worked out anyway, that God has a plan, and that he should be with the angel woman.
Yeah. Is that what it is? Like, is he thinking about going back to her? Because he does.
Oh, of course.
Did you know he finds out what was in that package that he drops off at her house?
He does.
In 2003, FedEx had a Super Bowl commercial where they revisit this scene. And she's home. He gives her the package. She opens it. He's like, what was in it? I always wondered what was in it. She's like, oh, a satellite phone, a GPS tracker, fishing hooks and fishing line matches, water purification tablets, just silly stuff like that.
Yeah, that was something that even Zemeckis put on the DVD as an Easter egg back when this was first released, long before the Super Bowl commercial. He just says, what was in that box he never opened? A solar charging waterproof satellite phone. He didn't include the fishing line and all the other stuff, but the satellite phone was straight from Zemeckis.
But of course, it was God's plan. It had the angel wings on it, and we saw that woman at the beginning getting divorced from her husband.
What good does her angel wings do? Like, her husband's cheating on her. Those angel wings cause a plane to crash. Those angel wings are evil. That's the devil, not God.
Yeah, but it all works out because, you know, now that he's at the crossroads, we know where he's going. Like,
The literal crossroads. Ugh.
Yes. I mean, you know, like, audiences like this. I don't like this, but people like this.
I hate it. This is like the rat in The Departed.
And some people believe this. Here's the thing, is this is where it gets down to, like, personal belief. Like, I don't believe everything comes from a master plan, but some people do. And so when they see something like this, they don't see contrivance. They don't see bad writing.
Yeah, like Jennifer Garner in that movie where her daughter falls off a tree and her cancer goes away and she believes it's because of God.
Yes. If you can take that leap of faith, then this will be a beautiful ending that tells you it doesn't matter that he didn't get with Helen Hunt because the woman that he needs has been there all that time as well and is waiting for him down the road. And she's younger and prettier and got more of a business thing going anyway.
And I'm so frustrated because I want to see him dealing with, I've missed out on 4 years of civilization, and the only scene we get is, oh, you know, we got a team in Tennessee now, a football team. It's the Titans. They used to be the Houston Oilers. They moved here. He's like, wow. Like, that's the big scene where he learns about all the changes that had taken place in 4 years.
I agree. I wanted it to be hard. I wanted it to be hard for him because I would believe that. And because I believe that that's the way the world works. But some people will see this as you were tested and now you're rewarded for making the correct choices.
Yeah, I didn't even get watching this that he was all into that girl all of a sudden.
Oh, he's like thinking about, because he's at the crossroad. He could go like towards California. He could go north or whatever. Or he could go back to her place once he notices those wings on her bumper.
The husband's name was taken off the awning, so we know they divorced. Not only was he cheating, but he's way out of the picture. And she's single and available. And just, again, they make it very easy for him to know exactly what direction to go in.
Well, what direction are you going in? Jacob, Stuart, do you recommend Castaway? Jacob.
Thinking about this movie, it reminded me of a class I took in college around the time I saw this or around the time this movie came out. And it was, just an English class about short stories. But one of the things the professor would do, he'd take like a kind of a pulpy short story and then a more academic one that, you know, the college professors love. And, you know, on his test, you'd have to read both those stories and then talk about why one was better than the other, you know, to try to teach people, hey, to have more discriminating taste, I guess. It doesn't always have to be those fun pulp stories. And that's how I approached this film. Like, this is the fun pulp version, and there is fun here. I want the more serious version. I want to see PTSD dealing with returning to civilization. Like, this island stuff is fun. Like, this is the best. I was never a fan of the TV show Survivor, so this is the best episode of Survivor to me. Like, whenever he's on the island, and that is the majority of the film, or at least half, I think, when you break it down, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff before and after. But that island stuff, it's a fun adventure. You know, like Ed Powell said, a Robinson Crusoe type film. And so there is fun there. I wish it was deeper. I think there's a lot of missed opportunities or still a lot of opportunities for someone that wants to do a survival story. And there's probably some out there that I'm just not thinking of where they deal with the aftermath. You know, I think of Deer Hunter. That's so associated with being a Vietnam film, but it's really more about the aftermath when you watch that of Vietnam. So that's what I'm just more interested in. That's what I find more challenging. But yeah, this is a fun island adventure. Like, it's better than that Full House episode where they find the Beach Boys on the other side of the island. Maybe not as good as Where the Boys Aren't Three, but I could recommend it as a fun popcorn film. I see the religious imagery and all the stuff they may be doing there. That's not the draw here. Just a fun survival story. I could give it a mild recommend just based on that take of it.
Stuart.
Yeah, there was one movie I was thinking about when I emerged from this. Shawshank Redemption. Again, an inspirational epic so many people love and I really struggle with. I mean, I'll be blunt. I don't lean on self-help. I don't lean on religious parables when I'm struggling to get through tough times. And I don't necessarily believe there's a design to the universe that tells you everything is going to work out for the best. So even though we're living in some really tough times, COVID has made everyone marooned on a desert island, so to speak. I did not feel my soul restored watching Chuck's story. I did not feel that connection. But I know so many people are going to, and I feel like a tool by saying, I don't really get it, when I know people will. There are people that are going to love this, but it's not me. I think I still could like it if they had convinced me that the relationship was worthy of the struggle they go through. If I liked Chuck and Kelly, if I wanted to see them work it out, if they really did set that up as a test for them, then I think that, yeah, it would be a movie that I would really still be able to get a lot of emotional impact from. As is, it works on that base level. What you're talking about, Jacob, it works as a survivalist story. How is Chuck going to open the coconut? How is he going to get to the top of the mountain? Like, all that stuff, it ends up just working really only on that level for me. And I don't know, is that enough? I think this movie's daring. I think this movie is challenging in what it sets out to do and what it won't let itself do. I think Hanks, as a one-man show, did all that he could, but there's just not enough romance here. Like, this needed to be Titanic 2. I like Titanic. I know some people shit on that film, but I could go with that movie. If I really cared about this doomed romance, this would work for me. But I think I have to go not recommend, because I don't care about Kelly and Chuck.
And I don't care about Kelly and Chuck either. And I really think that the parts of this movie in Memphis are really awkward. And what's strange is, that's half the film. I just didn't remember that only half the film is on the island. But that's how they're able to pull it off, is because it would be much harder to just watch 2 hours of a guy on an island that you didn't see in the real world. I think that would be even more daring, is you just start the movie with him washing up ashore. But then you'd lose that great plane crash too. And it is a great plane crash. I mean, again, I had my heart in my throat during periods of that.
It is. Best moment in the film, maybe?
Yeah, absolutely. When that guy hits his head too, that's why you wear a seatbelt on a plane. Not that it's going to help you in case of a crash, so you don't hit your head on the frickin' roof.
I rewound that 3 times to watch it again and again. And it was always painful, even the third time. I'm like, oh!
Yeah. But being Tom Hanks, he's somebody relatable. And so I enjoy the adventure story and seeing him go through things and wondering, could I do that? Would I be able to start the fire? You know, would I be able to throw a spear at a fish after 4 years of trying? I enjoy this movie as an escapist adventure movie. And if you try to get more than that out of it, including a character arc, you're going to be left disappointed. I think you could turn this movie off when the boat shows up and rescues him, but even still,
I just want to put it out there. I do think the relationship he establishes with Wilson is one audiences like. I liked it.
I do too. I like Wilson a lot. That's why I was really sad for him when he lost Wilson when I saw this in theaters. But watching it again now, I didn't find myself as engaged, but for the technical reasons, for the fact that Tom Hanks does solidly carry an hour of a movie where it's him or him in a volleyball. The fact that, you know, again, I bring this up sometimes. In Empire Strikes Back, Mark Hamill doesn't get the credit he deserves because acting is reacting, and his reacting made us believe that little green Muppet was a real Jedi Master. And here, Tom Hanks makes us care about Wilson. It's not the volleyball that makes us care. It's Tom Hanks' performance that makes us care about Wilson. Hanks is good on the island, and he gives his all to it, and it's worth seeing for that reason alone. So yeah, I'm going to eke it over. It's a recommend.
Okay, so you guys don't love it. I think we all like the same parts of the movie. When it's best is when it's focused on survival.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when it's at its worst, it's when it's trying to rectify what the experience made him as a person.
Yeah, I don't think that it's satisfying in that way. I wish that it was, but yet it's already so trite as it is trying to give him something. I'd hate to see what it might do. But you know what? Honestly, this exact same movie in the hands of Spielberg, could hit it out of the park, because Spielberg knows how to tug those heartstrings. Zemeckis knows how to punch those keys on a keyboard.
You know, ever since Jacob said Terrence Malick, I'm like, God, I want to see that movie.
I know!
I want to see that movie. Yeah, I think this material would have been great for him.
Or if you've seen Walkabout, I mean, bring Nicholas Rogue back somehow. Mm. I think he could do it too.
Yeah, there. I would like the arty take, I think is what I'm saying, where we see a lot of nature really taking the spotlight in the center stage, and the characters, the human beings, maybe being the supporting.
Yeah, that's not something I would jones for. But I'm happy to have revisited it, you know, again, when it's been 20 years, getting a refresher of what the movie is and how it works. And I enjoyed the viewing. Like I said, that's why I recommend it, is I thought it was a fun watch.
It goes down easy, yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't have any problem with the story when I saw it in 2000. Now, I've got 14 years of film critiquing under my belt, as well as having the Now Playing goggles on while watching it. And yeah, the humanist story is poor, but the movie is, it's solid.
You know, I feel kind of bad, but like, Ed keeps nominating these movies that I really like some aspects of, but I like ultimately can't get over to the green side on. Like, AI, they all have similar issues for me of just like, there's something about it that I find so compelling, and yet there's always this other part that I'm just like, but why don't you have this? Vanilla Sky, AI, and this one. Yeah, I struggle with all of them, but interesting films. I keep them coming, Ed, because I think, yeah, you really got me thinking.
Absolutely. And Ed, thank you so much for your third pick. I think we've had good conversations on all three, even if not Green Arrows on all three. I don't think Vanilla Sky got any, did it?
Not for me.
Not for me.
Nope.
And as another way to say thank you to you patrons, we're giving you an early heads up on a contest we're running. Thanks to our friends at Paramount Home Entertainment, we're giving away 5 digital download codes to the new thriller, The Vanished.
Who's that got in it? Never heard of it.
The Vanished is actually coming out on digital today. It stars Thomas Jane and Anne Heche. If you were looking for that hung reunion, now you have it.
Anne Heche, talk about Vanished. Where's she been for the last 20 years?
Last time I saw Thomas Jane, he was in a movie with Bruce Willis, so,
Ooh, that's not, I guess, video on demand. That's where you go.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? Who knows? We don't know anything about the movie. Maybe it's worth the while. And it's free. You could win it. So no harm, no foul.
It's about a husband and wife, Anne Heche and Thomas Jane, whose daughter goes missing during a family trip. It gets creepy when Jason Patrick shows up as a cop and things are not what they seem.
Is this a secret Terminator movie?
Not Robert Patrick.
Oh, that's Robert Patrick.
Jason Patrick from Rush and The Lost Boys.
Jason. Okay, yes, okay. Yep, it's my wires are were crossed. I've got my Patricks back in order now.
So we're giving away 5 codes, and all you have to do to get them is be signed up for our newsletter, Now Playing in Focus. We've had a newsletter for years, and I know a lot of you are signed up already, but we've really kind of revamped it, and it's coming out more regularly. If you've signed up already, you're already entered to win one of these copies of The Vanished. If you haven't, head to nowplayingpodcast.com. There's a link at the top that says subscribe, and then it tells you how to subscribe to our podcast. And if you're a patron, you probably already are. But then if you go down one more, there's a box to subscribe to our newsletter. Subscribe to the newsletter by August 30th, and you're entered to win, and we will email the winners and post the winners on social media on September 1st.
Good luck, everyone.
And thank you to everyone who's listening to this, all of our patrons. We appreciate you, whether you're pledging the $10 to get this higher so you can get some of the other bonus podcasts, or all the way up to where you can pledge for a movie. We've got a handful more listener picks coming. And next week, patrons, you're going to get another bonus show. We usually do one a month for patrons because we've hit that milestone in our patron campaign, but we're going to do 2 here in August. You're going to get 3 shows in 3 weeks in a row. Next time, we're doing a patron pick going to, it's actually been a much requested film for years, Jim Henson's Dark Crystal.
Oh, I've wanted to revisit this one since I was like 6 and saw it in theaters. It's been a very long time.
Yeah, childhood trauma. It's still very, very fresh. It is dark. I mean, it is like Fraggle Rock on meth dark. Like that crystal they're doing, yeah, I think it's meth.
So I haven't seen this in theaters either, and I'm interested to see what I think now. I remember what I thought then, and we will talk about that next week for all of you gracious, loyal, and generous supporters. Thank you all. So until next time, that's it.
I'm sorry, Wilson! Wilson! I can't! Wilson! Wilson!
Thank you to all the listeners who have backed us through our Podbean crowdfunding campaign, and we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast.
I love you, and I'm going to see you soon, and you know what that means.
Without patrons such as yourself, we couldn't keep doing the shows we put out every single Tuesday. So thanks to you all.
We might just make it. Did that thought ever cross your brain?
And a special thank you to Ed Powell for his incredible support of our show and for picking Castaway for our host to review.
That deserves something special.
If you enjoy Now Playing, please head to iTunes and leave us a 5-star listing. It's the best way to help spread the word about the podcast.
S.O.S. Please help!
You can follow Now Playing on Facebook and Twitter, where we post announcements of new episodes and where the hosts post movie mini reviews. Links to our social media pages are available on our homepage.
You said you'd be right back.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
Because we live or we die by the clock, we never turn our back on it. And we never, ever allow ourselves the sin of losing track of time.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
And that is what you people are going to have to start doing. You have to start doing whatever it takes.
Now Playing is edited by Heath and Arnie.
Crunch time! Crunch time!
Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, tick tock.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
All you have to do is smile and say thank you.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
I think that's something with raising your right hand and swearing to tell the truth.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein.
See no evil, hear no evil.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
Broadcasting in the blood.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
You have to keep bringing that up, can't you? Just forget it.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2020. And no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Okay, people, let's go. Party's over. Let's go home.
And then I felt like after that, he did what he wanted to do. Road to Perdition was a movie we all liked.
No, he didn't.
No. Don't you include me in that.
Only you liked it.
Oh, yeah. Only I liked it? Wow, I liked that movie so much I remembered you guys liking it. All right.
No. No.
Did not like strongly.
But it's not like I felt like Chuck.
Yeah.
He never, you know, they rarely say his name.
That island stuff, it's a fun adventure. I think, who sponsored this?
FedEx?
Oh. No, the review. And yeah. It was our personal FedEx.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Does that work for FedEx? We don't know.
And if you try to get more than that out of it, including a character arc, you're going to be left disappointed. I think you could turn this movie off when the boat shows up and rescues him.
Arnie, would you say there's as much character development as there is in Where the Boys Aren't Three? Because I'm guessing there's not much character development in that either.
You'd be surprised, actually, because they were catty showgirls who, you know, they'd compete.
What, would they learn the joy of pussy eating or something? Like, they hated it before, but they're where the boys are, and so they learned to love it.
My God.
Anyway. Stuart.
Yeah, there was one movie I was thinking about when I emerged from this.
Where the Boys Aren't Three?
No, it's not that. I don't know what that is. I don't know why you'd be thinking of it.
Let me look for my end line.
And in a movie like this, I don't know where you go to. Just get some waves crashing or something.
Wilson!
Yeah, there's nothing. Something about time.
There's a lot of it.
Oh, you gotta do, So, that's it. That eulogy he gives for Albert.
All right. So, until next time, that's it.
But you got something better.
I have nothing better.
Yeah, that works. It works.